Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is The Guardian.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you.
Welcome to the Final Word Ashes Daily. I'm Emma John, and I'm here in the UK listening to a storm beat on my window through the night while England attempt to save the first Ashes test. Meanwhile, my Australian colleagues, Adam Collins and Jeff Lemon, are enjoying the balmy Brisbane weather over at the Gabba. To begin with, a question for us all. Do you know a lost cause when you see one? Because Joe Root certainly doesn't. 2 wickets down, 278 runs behind. That was the match situation when he walked to the crease halfway through the afternoon session. Out in the middle, David Malan was looking the most likely donor for Nathan Lyon's 400th test wicket. This was a gift the spinner had been waiting exactly 325 days for, and the wicked bounce and spin he was conjuring from the Gabba's still greenish wicket looked pretty certain to tease it out soon. For England fans, meanwhile, seeing Root walk to the crease was a bit like watching the valiant commander in the final act of an old war movie. He's one of those heroes who's already pulled off multiple valiant rescues. He's carried one of his injured men across a desert on his back. And then, just when he's got everyone safely back behind the line, he hears a child's cry and you know he's going to head back out into the danger alone. You look at his kind, careworn eyes and you want to scream, "Don't do it, man! What more can anyone expect of you? Spare yourself! See your family again!" He doesn't, of course, because that's not who he is. And sometimes, just sometimes, the writers even let him make it to the end of the story. At today's close of play, after Pat Cummins had emptied his entire artillery upon him, Joe Root was still standing there, 86 not out. And so, by the way, was his brother-in-arms, Malan. England rode their luck, it's true, but then haven't Australia done the same in this test? Malan survived a DRS appeal for caught behind off Josh Hazlewood and a flying edge a couple of balls later. When he miscued a pull off Pat Cummins to backward square leg, Marcus Harris got the sun in his eyes en route to the ball and ended up wearing it on the chin. Root's innings was a more nerveless one, naturally. He straight drove Cummins and cover drove Stark and reverse swept Lyon. And, almost incidentally, in the second over after tea, he pulled a single that broke England's record for number of runs in a calendar year. It has taken a while to reach this point, but finally we've got an actual contest between these sides, and that can only bode well for the rest of the series. England finished the day just 58 runs behind. Still, when their fans in the crowd start whistling the theme tune from The Great Escape tomorrow, they'd be well placed to remember how that film ends.
Thanks to Emma John there in London. Day three, what a day to bat at the Gabba, and England have taken full advantage. Let's start at the end of the day first, Jeff. Malan and Root putting on an unbeaten 159. I've watched Joe Root make hundreds all around the world this year, be it on television or at the ground, and I'm not surprised to see him bat like this in favourable conditions. But there was that psychological hurdle to clear after being all out 147 on the first day, an enormous deficit of 278. But Root's temperament, and I think Malan, the fact that he wanted to make contact ball on bat from the get-go, and the fact that they both scored. It was such an even-paced partnership the whole way through. And now they've got England to within 58 runs of parity. I think England fans, Let's not get carried away. Only six teams have won after conceding a 200-run first innings deficit before. But as we learnt last year when India were here, a lot of the rules are being thrown out the window about Test cricket because this white ball mentality is infused within the long-form game. They'll go to bed tonight, Jeff, with Joe Root not out 88 or 86, whatever it is, and Milan there as well, roughly the same. And they'll be thinking something could be very special at their disposal over the next 2 days if they can get things right for another session tomorrow.
Joe Root 86, Milan 80, and Root is four runs away from going to number 7 on the list for most runs in a calendar year. He went past 1,500 today. So it felt like this was the resumption of normal service for Root. The first innings was the aberration. The second was when, I mean, I woke up this morning here in Brisbane and it was hot. Like 6 a.m. felt like 9 a.m. It was bright. It was hot. And I thought, terrific batting day if they can get the last 3 wickets without conceding too many. And yep. It didn't look like they'd done that because Travis Head pushed on and he made runs and it looked like that lead was too big. But, I mean, they've whittled away so much of it by now that it's not inconceivable that they could put together a decent lead as long as things don't go wrong on day 4. Root just looked so calm and so composed. He didn't reach for the ball, not once that I noticed all day. He waited for the pace to come to him. He did the thing that he does, which is just opening the blade a bit here and there and steering behind point and picking up singles and just knocking the ball around. And David Milan, I thought the key for him was that he's in this team because he plays short balls well, not necessarily head-high bounces, but just because he's not discomforted by riding the bounce. Mm. He's got that sort of technique that enables him to do that. And he did that right from the start. He was opening the face and running the ball away. He was cutting behind point. He was taking on Nathan Lyon whenever the spinner dropped short. So his cross-bat shots, and particularly against Australia's quicks, allowed him to take command of the situation, I suppose, even though the two openers didn't make a big impression.
Yeah, and remember, Milan's come into this team off one innings for Yorkshire last year in the championship. He's played 7 first-class games in the last 2 years. 2 of them are test matches. I mean, you know, like, it shouldn't work, but it kind of does because he's a player of vast experience. He's been around the world a number of times on the T20 circuit. He isn't daunted by the occasion. I mean, we spoke to him on the final word, Jeff, this time last year, and his red ball hopes were still there. But I think to a certain extent, his test career, he thought, was behind him, which means that now it's like, in the same way we spoke about Travis Head being liberated yesterday by being returned to this team and playing very much what is his best game, I think there's some similarities there with Milan. He wasn't going for it today by any stretch of the imagination. He was playing conservatively by his standards. But, yeah, I like the point you make about riding the bounce, especially out towards cover point. He does it all day long. He doesn't seem daunted about getting out the way of the short ball. It was always going to come, much as it did at the Wacker 4 years ago when he made that splendid Ashes 100. So I think good selection. Confident selection. I know we talked a lot about England lacking in confidence at the selection table, but I like where Milan fits at the moment. And Joe Root, he was 16th in terms of all-time runs in a calendar year at the start of today. He's now 7th. By the end of lunch tomorrow, I suppose, he might be up to 5th or 6th or something like that, such as the clip that he's going at. And that clump of players who are somewhere between 1,500 and 1,600. Jeff, I know you've been monitoring this ever so closely over the last couple of months, but we saw what Root's capable of in the subcontinent. We saw what he was capable of against India when he batted so nicely with 300s in 3 consecutive test matches. And I'm so pleased that that's translating to this country and this series where he's never made 3 figures before.
Well, I felt like what they picked David Milan for was the days on relatively flatter surfaces in good batting conditions, but good Australian batting conditions. They needed someone who could really profit, and Milan can, and Root can profit in any conditions anywhere around the world. So there was a big clump of players between 1,400 and 1,500 that he went past as well. He's the biggest scorer for England now in a calendar year, went past his own tally and Johnny Bairstow and Michael Vaughan in that sort of 1,400 range. So right up there, but he looked so composed doing it. It was a minor victory for England in that Rory Burns was not out in the first over of the innings. He was given out from the final ball of the first over and then reprieved on DRS and managed to at least hang around until after the lunch break. And look, it wasn't a huge contribution, but Australia finished up with 45 minutes left in the morning session and had a wicket fallen before lunch. It could have presaged some
ugliness. 3-day test, right?
Yeah.
I mean, 75 overs Australia had to bowl. I mean, that was the first thing I said to my colleagues on air. It was 75 overs to bowl. If Australia can get the job done today, that means 2 days off, back-to-back test matches, the bowlers not having to bowl tomorrow. That's a huge advantage. We talk about marginal gains in a test series often on our show. That would have been a considerable marginal gain, if you know what I'm trying to say, for Australia not having to effectively work on the weekend. But now they've got 8 wickets to take on the Saturday. And Josh Hazlewood's only bowled 8 of the 70 overs. We're not entirely sure what the story is there. He was off the ground late in the day. Mitchell Starc bowled a lightning over to Rory Burns to start, actually to Hamid, then Burns. We'll talk about Burns not taking the first ball in a sec, but gets Burns given out leg before and overturned. After lunch, Starc was wayward. Did get a wicket, did get Hamid caught down the leg side, but he wasn't anywhere near as potent as he was on morning one. And suddenly it's a different kind of conversation for Patrick Cummins, who has to go to Marnus Labuschagne, has to go to Cameron Green for more than one over here and there. I know Green looked quite good today, but nevertheless, it's not the ideal. It's not plan A, put it that way. So, yeah, it does make for a fascinating day tomorrow on the basis of what England might achieve if they knock off the deficit, but also asking lots of questions of Australia. Can they dig deep and press home the advantage they very much earned over the first 7 sessions of this test match?
I'd like to talk about Patrick Cummins for a second. He bowled so well, even through that partnership. I mean, he got driven through the covers a couple of times, but, you know, literally a couple of times. He was moving the ball away from Root. He was testing him out. He brought himself on and Hazlewood on as soon as Root came to the crease to really attack, you know, knowing that they're the two who've had some success against Root over a period of time. They didn't get his wicket, but they really tested him out through that spell. I mean, Hazlewood, the way that he keeps cutting the ball in past the right-hander's inside edge and hits them on the body, hits them on the pads and then decks it away. And Cummins just with that suffocating line. And the fact that Root got through that examination and was able to prosper afterwards was a credit to him. But yeah, Hazlewood then off the field, no explanation, didn't see much of him for the rest of the day. David Warner wasn't on the field for the whole innings. The story on him is that he's got bruised ribs. He got hit when he was batting. And so I think the Australian gamble was, okay, if you're off the field for the whole innings, you can't then bat afterwards. But the Australian assumption was they probably wouldn't need to bat again, and therefore there was no point in him coming on. And if they do need to bat again tomorrow, then they can bring him on tomorrow and make sure that he's able to open the innings with the bat if required. So I don't think there's anything bigger than that with David Warner. I didn't get that impression at the ground, but he did spend the entire time off the field.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Today.
There are some concerns. I think when they arrived this morning, they were a little bit worried about whether he might have cracked the rib. He's had a scan. I think that's precautionary. But back-to-back test matches, I'll just remind you that Usman Khawaja averages 96 when opening the batting for Australia. So if they do need to leave Warner out on the basis of fitness next week. And you're probably right that they were banking on not needing Warner, thus why he was off the field. And now they might, but he can bat down the list. And I mean, they've got options. They're still fundamentally steering this game, especially you talk about Cummins, that ball to Burns. Was an absolute brute. They're 10 overs away from a second new ball, an extra night's sleep, the restorative powers of that. And, you know, I must say, Nathan Lyon stuck on 399 test wickets. I made a note earlier that he's been on 390, in the 390s rather, for 3 weeks longer than it was the case that the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a public health emergency of international concern. So really, it has been a really long time, more than I think nearly 1,300 deliveries he's bowled since taking wicket number 390 at the SCG in January 2020. But I wouldn't be too worried about Lyon. Lyon's not bowling poorly. I've seen Lyon bowl poorly and snatch it. He's not doing that. Things just aren't breaking his way right now. So he's creating half chances that aren't going to hand. And, you know, I think that once he breaks the drought, so to speak, and gets wicket 400, he might still have quite a profitable series. But ever so frustrating for him that it's such a focus right now, as it was at the Gabba 10 months ago, that he can't quite creep over the line to wicket 400 as yet.
I thought he did start snatching at it later in the day. He bowled some really good stuff to David Malan early, some big turners, turned it away from the bat, made him think about it a bit. But I don't know if you noticed his speeds creeping up through the day, but he was bowling a lot at 89, 90, 91 kilometres an hour rather than down at sort of 85, 86. It doesn't sound like a huge difference, right, but it can be. And when Lyon's going well, he's ripping the ball over the top of the ball. He's making sure he gives it lots of overspin so that it bounces up high. And it just looked like he was darting it down more as the day went on. So I felt like that frustration was starting to get to him, that he's been bowling for a long time in the 390s, as you say, and hasn't been able to tip over.
Yeah, I think that also is to the enormous credit of Root, especially the way that he played Lyon. I mean, Lyon at his best, Root at his best, I should say, when facing spin, as we saw through the English summer, wherever you move a fielder, that's where he gets a single next ball. And there was a little bit of that going on with Nathan Lyon in the final session. I felt that no matter what Pat Cummins did with Lyon in terms of adjusting the field, Root was almost taking the mick, which is a great place to be for the England captain, who copped a whack himself, by the way, inside edge on a Mitchell Starc delivery back onto his knee. He was incapacitated for about 2 minutes there. I'm not sure whether that might have an effect on the way he plays tomorrow, but he's made of pretty tough stuff, Joe Root. So, yeah, I mean, my overarching emotion as we record this podcast, Jeff, is excitement. I was genuinely worried at stumps on day one, indeed on stumps on day two, that this could have that, you know, whisper at 5-0 feel about it. And look, maybe it will play out that way. But the very fact that England have had two fabulous sessions and have not only achieved those marginal gains I spoke of before, almost certainly making Australia bat a second time and into day four and all the rest of it, but have reminded everybody that they've got an absolute superstar in Root, a most able man riding shotgun in David Malan at number three. And yes, Burns out of form, out early again. Yes, Hamid down the leg side, but looked kind of set the time that he did. You know, again, it's a small but noteworthy point on the way through. It might not be quite as uncompetitive as we feared a couple of days ago. And that's got to be a good thing for this series.
So the final word Hall of Fame, where we pick the most final word moment of the day. What stood out to you on day three, Adam?
I'm going to doff my cap to Travis Head for some of the outlandish shots that he played towards the end of his mega innings of 152. Not least the shot off Mark Wood when he walked across his stumps with Ollie Pope fielding at deep backward square leg, and almost, it was a pickup shot off middle stump, off Mark Wood bowling 150 clicks, and placed it right over Pope's head. And I thought, what a lovely punctuation mark on an incredibly enjoyable innings to watch and to call, and what I hope will be a turning point in this young man's career. And yes, I thought it was final word Hall of Fame worthy, just how bold it was at the time. Yes, he was batting with the tail and all the rest of it, but you've got to have some pretty serious skills to pull that off, and Travis Head certainly has that.
What I liked most about that shot was that he'd already rehearsed it and missed it. He tried it at the start of the over, nearly lost his leg stump, and then said, you know what, I think I'll do that again, and then nailed it the second time around. Particularly enjoyed that. A Hall of Fame nomination for me would be Jack Leach getting two overs this morning that went for 7 runs. After bowling 11 overs that went for 95 yesterday, he came back on and got through a couple of tidy ones, one for a couple of singles, one for 5. That must have felt beautiful to Jack Leach to get through a couple of cheap ones.
He's still got 100 next to his name, though. I saw some of the more... Or shall we say, no, you know, I won't describe what type of Twitter accounts they are, but the type of Twitter account that would do that made light of the fact that he's the first England player to rack up 100 this series from, I think, about 13 overs or something like that. So,
13 overs.
Yes, but behind the eight ball, as it were. Anything else for us, Hall of Fame-wise, Jeff?
Maybe the fact that they had to ring in a guy from a Gold Coast Premier Cricket Club. Was it Hugo Barden, I think his name was, who had to field for the whole day?
Hugo Barden, he goes down alongside, Well, we've seen a few of these over the years, haven't we? Theo Gyropoulos took that fabulous catch out at the Wacker. Marnus Labuschagne as well. I think Theo Gyropoulos took that catch and underneath his name it said Marcus Stoinis. It wasn't Marcus, it was Theo, who now, of course, works as a colleague of ours in the media. And Marnus took that brilliant catch to remove Ross Taylor on 291, which caused some controversy for some other reasons that aren't worth revisiting now. So, yeah, I always like it when there's a subfielder from a club team, not even the Shield team.
So that's pretty Hall of Fame worthy. Player of the day, maybe it goes to Milan for me rather than Root, because Root's the obvious one, but Root will be player of the day about six other times probably through the series. David Milan was important in that this is the job he was picked for, as I suggested earlier, and he delivered in the first test.
Yeah, and always nice to see part of the Final Word crew in David Milan, a former guest of the show. If you want to hear our long interview with him, it's in the back catalogue from when he and I were in hotel quarantine together last year, about four doors down in our hotel in Perth. That is it for the Final Word Daily today. Thank you for everyone who's involved in the production behind the scenes on what we're doing. To all our patrons, to all our listeners, hope you have an enjoyable night if you're in Australia, or a wonderful day if you're in England. This test match isn't quite yet in the balance, but it might be trending that way. I'd watch tomorrow. Adam Collins, Jeff Lemon signing off. This has been the Final Word Daily.
That's it for today. Thanks from Adam, Jeff and me for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. If you enjoyed the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and maybe even share us with your friends. This episode was produced by Joe Koning and The Final Word is produced by Bad Producer Productions and edited by James Hurley. The executive producers are Gabrielle Jackson and Melanie Tate.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.